Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:10 p.m. That is April 12th, and I thought we'd kick off with the S&P 500. At one point today, it was up and had reversed just about all of yesterday's decline, and then subsequently reversed it. So part of the reason why we had an initial rally was because there was some enthusiasm that the cost of used vehicles was declining. Now, those figures are reported in arrears, whereas the fortunes of companies like CarMax and Carvana are in real time, and they have been coming down with a really pronounced downtrend. So CarMax is in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it's been an area of support in the past. But there's less inventory of used cars. The price of used cars now approximates that of new vehicles. And with liquidity getting sucked out of the system and financial conditions tightening, then the ability of people to pay is obviously going to have an impact on sales. So we're already seeing that priced into the shares. And this is also one of the factors that's contributing to this expectation that inflation might well be peaking. And there's potential for that to be the case. But what's more likely is that we're going to see a peak in some forms of demand because commodity prices are still really firm. And oil prices were looking a bit touch and go yesterday and then rebounded pretty emphatically in here today, up $6 to confirm near-term support in the region of $100. So this is at least short-term support, but potentially also building the foundation for another run higher towards the $120 area, potentially more than that. And not least because Vladimir Putin came out today and said that talks with Ukraine are dead. So that's obviously one of the factors that's contributing to higher oil prices. Something that I think investors will be particularly attuned to is the fact that oil shares haven't pulled back at all. So the energy spider is right in the region of the peaks from back in 2017 and 2018 and continues to be really quite firm. Then we can think about some of the energy related sectors like the MLP sector. So it pushed on to a new recovery high in here today, and it might be up 4 times in the last 2 years, but it's only now approximating the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and this looks like it has further to go on the upside. Then ultimately, there's going to have to be more oil services spending, and the oil services sector also continues to do well and has already broken out of this first step above the type 2 bottom. So it's looking increasingly likely that investors are siphoning money out of the growth sector and into resources. Now, when we think about bonds, we have an exceptionally oversold condition, and we saw yields pulling back a little in here today, down 7 basis points. Now, in normal circumstances, a day where the market moved 7 basis points would have been considered a lot. But considering that it has been rising by about that measure almost every day for the last 6 weeks, we're going to need an even bigger dynamic move to really confirm that this is a peak of more than very short-term significance. Because even though inflationary pressures, at least some inflationary pressures, might be moderating, the reality is that the Federal Reserve has already committed itself to withdrawing liquidity from the market. And if they do, in fact, embark upon quantitative tightening, it's going to contribute to deflationary pressures on the economy. And it'll do that by killing demand. But one thing is for certain, and it's that any time we see that bond yields moderate, then gold does well. So gold prices were up $15 today, firming from the $1,950 area. This is a new recovery high following the drawdown from the peak in early March. I've been adamant that I don't believe this is anything other than a consolidation in the region of the all-time peaks, and it is more likely than not that once this little consolidation has run its course, then gold is going to break emphatically on the upside. And in the event that bond yields start to contract, because that is generally what happens after quantitative tightening begins. Once the negative growth effects of higher interest rates and the withdrawal of liquidity starts to be felt in the economy, a bid appears for bonds because people start to hedge their exposure to falling growth and deflationary forces, then that is going to put a cap on the ability of central banks to raise rates. The competitive advantage of higher yields for bonds then disappears. Gold takes on additional luster as a store of value, and then it would also be accompanied by a weaker dollar. And of course, then a weaker dollar would also remove some of the reins on the advance in gold. So we're at a rather interesting juncture here where the price is really only just beginning to firm. And silver has broken the year-long sequence of lower rally highs and is now consolidating and firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. So this also looks like bullish price action, and this is ultimately a first step above the base. And a first step above the base is the confirmation that we're in a new medium or secular bull market trend overall. So we had a good long base formation, and we had stabs on the downside, failed downside breaks in 2020, then a really emphatic breakout, then a lengthy consolidation. And this isn't at all unusual, where we get a very emphatic breakout from a base formation. It punctures the vacuum of supply above the market. Prices will continue to rally until they meet a new source of supply, where people might not have been willing to sell at 20, but with an explosive breakout, they become willing to sell at 30. Then we move into a lengthier period of consolidation, because people then argue, are we in a new secular bull market or whether this was really just a cyclical move? And then when the first step above the base is completed, well, then you have clear confirmation that you are in a secular trend overall. So what the number one characteristic of the first step above the base is that people have spent nearly 2 years paying more for silver than they have in the previous 7 years. So that alone tells us that there's a good reason why people should want to pay a premium. And obviously the potential is that the purchasing power of fiat currencies is going to decline, and that we're moving into a period of financial repression. And ultimately, we're, I think realistically, we're already in a period of financial repression. The COVID lockdown in Shanghai is beginning to moderate. So the CSI 300 rebounded in here today. And this at least helps to bolster the opinion that perhaps this is a higher reaction low. Now, I saw a chart from BCA today looking at China's credit impulse. And it hasn't turned the corner just yet. So we're still seeing some evidence that China isn't quite yet willing to supply the stimulus necessary to support the stock market and consumption overall. And they're continuing to hold the renminbi very steady. So there's a bit of a catch-22 for the Chinese administration. They have slowing growth because of the response to the pandemic. Then they need to stimulate in order to preserve the property market from moving into a terminal decline. At the same time, they're trying to internationalize the currency, and the number one way of doing that is making sure that it's not too volatile. And they want, and they're having these discussions, particularly with Russia, about what currency to pay for oil imports in. Will it be renminbi? Will it be gold? Or will it be rubles? And obviously, they want a steady currency in order to achieve that. When we then think about the US dollar, well, the dollar is right now in the region of the upper side of the range around 100 and steadied further again in here today because it's increasingly likely that the USA is going to be the developed market, or major market that raises rates and tightens liquidity first. So that then lends support to the dollar until the process stops. And the fact that gold continues to advance against that background, is, I think, quite relevant that we're in an environment where people are worried about their exposure. Now, when we think about the largest companies, Google is a really impressive company in that it has this. Well, it has in excess of 60 billion a year in free cash flow. That's primarily from advertising. And then it has all these additional investments in everything from chatbots to quantum computing and driverless cars. But it went up an awful lot in 2021, and now it's experiencing some pressure. And when we look at the performance of the Fangman plus Tesla shares relative to the total market cap of the wider market, it is breaking down. Now, we've had a lot of volatility and a lot of false dawns, but it is now back below the 200-day moving average. So it's relevant to pay attention to this, even if they can regroup and rebound. We've had a very choppy environment overall. And I think it's also relevant to just look at this on a just a nominal basis. The performance of these eight companies on aggregate is struggling to hold the region of the 200-day moving average. My base case is that the Nasdaq and the S&P 500 are going to revert back to their 1,000-day moving averages. I think a contraction of that magnitude is going to be required to get the Federal Reserve to relent from raising interest rates. And it's quite likely that it could even happen before they even begin to raise interest rates. When we go back and think about 2018, the market pulled back by 20%, tested the region of the 1,000-day moving average. The plunge protection team was brought into action. The Federal Reserve stopped raising interest rates in early 2019, and we started to see quantitative tightening ending as well. So, just how much stock market pain and asset price depreciation is the Federal Reserve willing to accept? In order to demonstrate that they are going to get tough on inflation. And of course, because consumers represent the majority of the US economy and the wealth effect is very much tied to the performance of the stock market, a drawdown of that magnitude would certainly start to hit demand. And that's obviously what the whole process of raising rates and containing or the size of the balance sheet and reversing the increase in the size of the balance sheet is about. Now, when we then think about Europe, well, the euro remains quite weak. The Eurostoxx index rebounded off its lows in here today. It'll probably be down tomorrow. And we're seeing that it is pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average and pausing in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It absolutely needs to hold the low above 400. We've had a sufficiently large rebound to give it plenty of room in which to consolidate. But the challenge for Europe is that the increasing trade combat or trade war with Russia and increasing tensions with China are obviously going to weigh on profitability. When we think about Germany, Germany was probably the country that benefited most from globalization. And Mrs. Tracy was the assistant to the CEO of Siemens and then the assistant to the CEO of ThyssenKrupp when she lived in China. And German companies were expanding and doing fantastically well in China for years. So China's trade surplus benefited enormously from globalization. And then you had the reconstitution of Germany and the falling of the Berlin Wall that pretty much implicitly created a friendly attitude towards Eastern Europe and to former Soviet republics, particularly Russia, in terms of just the benign political constitution when you're bringing millions of former Soviet Union citizens into the Federal Republic, then it just made sense to be more friendly towards Eastern Europe, and that's not working out particularly well. And then China imposing its will and basically telling anyone that's doing business there that they need to toe the party line is obviously also going to be rather difficult. Now, the MDAX peaked about 6 months ago, and it's now also in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But the MDAX is has been one of the primary sources of performance for German shares for decades. And it has almost universally bounced from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So this is rather important. It really does need to hold here. Now, of course, we can think about the other big challenge for Germany in that the euro was very much ma managed in line with Bundesbank principles at the beginning. And the only mandate that it has is to control inflation. Well, they've given that up. They've taken on lots of additional responsibilities. And they're very reluctant to do anything about raising rates. This is problematic. So there are a lot of assumptions that had gone into German businesses over the course of the last 30 years that are no longer true and are going to require some significant reassessment. And that is before we even begin to think about the impact of electric vehicles on the automotive sector. So there are certainly challenges here, and the 30,000 level for the MDAX is going to be pivotal because there is the real prospect that a large number of German and industrial European companies generally are going to find it more difficult to be profitable. So we're going to now see a question answered, perhaps over the next quarter, whether the value proposition for Europe is realizable or whether it's going to turn into a value trap. Because we've seen lots of examples of value traps over the last 20 years. There are lots of existing companies that had reliable cash flows, strong franchises that saw global events and technological innovation eat into those franchises. This is particularly evident in the fast fashion sector. Only a few years ago, the companies like Hennessy Mauritz or Inditex were the fast fashion leaders globally. And over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, they've given up all of that outperformance. So Hennessy Mauritz is back in the region of the lows from 2018, 19, and 2020. And Inditex has been trending lower now for years as well. Fast retail at one point was Japan's largest company. And Uniqlo is a well-understood global brand. And now we can just look at the share price, and it's been trending downwards. And these are recognizable global franchises that are being completely overwhelmed by online-only competitors, particularly from China, where there is a direct-to-consumer model. So you've got factories churning out thousands of new SKUs a day, and then have a global shipping model. So, and then TikTok has been one of the primary avenues through which they've been promoting. And of course, that's also a Chinese brand. So it's eating into the margins for these fast fashion companies, which had at one time been viewed as incredibly innovative because of the speed with which they could get out new SKUs. But instead of getting new SKUs out every week, Shein is getting them out every day. And this is creating a huge competitive force against these types of companies. So we're certainly in a churn environment where we have inflationary pressures, we have macro and economic uncertainties, we have monetary and fiscal uncertainties. And then we have the fact that we had this huge run-up in stock markets after the pandemic panic. And now we're starting to see some consolidation of that. And I think investors know that behind all of this and this huge decline in bond prices is the fact that there is a massive quantity of debt outstanding. And ultimately, those debts are going to have to be managed in some way, shape, or form. And it's not going to be a great idea to own them. So yields are under significant pressure to rise. And the only thing that's going to contain them is less demand and deflationary forces. So does look increasingly likely that stock markets are going to remain under pressure until that outcome is confirmed. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.